I'm Peter Mayerholtz.
And I'm Jesse James Garrett.
And we're finding our way, navigating the opportunities and challenges of design and design leadership.
On today's show, Jihad Afone, Chief Design Officer for the restaurant point-of-sale system Toast, joins us to talk about driving an experience strategy across functions beyond design, dealing with tricky executive stakeholders, and how his background in engineering informs his work now as a design leader.
Hi, Jihad. Great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us today. As you know, we've been talking to folks who have a title of Chief Design Officer, SVP of Design, SVP of UX, trying to better understand just what this role and responsibilities entails. So that's what we'll be digging in with you today. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So the first question we've been asking everybody, and we'll ask you, might as well start on the top rope. How do you define the role of Chief Design Officer? That is your current title at Toast. I believe that was your title at Splunk. What does that mean? What are the responsibilities? How are you held accountable? What does your leadership want from you? All of that.
So first of all, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with both of you. If you think of the role of any kind of executive team member, there are three main things you're doing. One is your discipline's contribution to the business. So if you're the chief technology officer, you're leading technology for the company. If you're the chief people officer, you're taking care of culture for the company. So your discipline's contribution to the company. The other one is how you're building your team and how you're building that organization that drives that work and bringing talent, hiring, growing talent, setting up the right culture for that team to bring the right culture into the company. And then how are you up-leveling that discipline or the contribution of that discipline to the company continuously? You can track that with metrics. You can track that qualitatively with feedback. You can track, there are multiple ways to track that, but that's the third piece. So if you think about it that way, and obviously any executive team member is looking at strategy, helping define strategy for the company on vision, feedback from customers and so on. But that's really just comes with the role. Like if you're at an exec role, you're helping drive strategy and execution for the company. But if you think of these three areas, the role of a chief design officer is to build, hire and grow talented designers, user researchers, design ops folks, the roles and disciplines required to operate a healthy organization, build that culture where around, skills and high quality work and hold customers' feedback and voice of customer as core to that story. They're responsible for up-leveling that conversation at the executive level and having conversations not just about customers in general, but about the way experiences help shape the product strategy, and then provide language for the executive team to talk about design and user experience. So internally for a team, it's easy for us to get stuck into, the details of how user research operates and how design operates and all the language and words that we can use in order to understand how our work is happening. Externally meaning within the rest of the company outside of the design team, the role of whether it's a CDO or VP of design, is to provide that language where the company can now talk about experience in an intelligent way that helps the company deliver more to it. And this is, by the way, where the conversation, I don't know if we're going to get there, but this is where like most conversation gets stuck on design metrics. But design metrics or experience metrics end up being a shortcut to, we don't really understand what you do. So could you please, translate it to the way the business operates? But it's really common language of the business.
You mentioned operating at an executive level. To whom are you reporting? Are you reporting straight into the CEO, into someone else in the C-suite? What's your relationship with that highest level of leadership in the organization?
At Toast, we're still, founder-led to some extent. We have a CEO, but we have two key founders that lead R&D and go-to-market. So I report on the product side of the R&D organization, and I'm part of what we call the R&D exec team, which is the triad, CTO, CDO, and the head of product, in addition to, chief security officer, and other disciplines that are related to R&D. But we operate as that key triad of CTO, CDO, and head of product, or SVP of product.
Last organizational question. What is your responsibility, if any, for like marketing or brand design? Obviously, you're working on product design and UX research. Are you also working on the marketing and brand design, or is that handled separately?
No, we collaborate very closely with them, but that's handled as part of the marketing org, reporting to the chief marketing officer.
And are you the first chief design officer they've had?
Yeah, the first chief design officer. They've had design leaders in the organization right. before at different levels.
Right. What led to the leveling up of design to a C-level function for Toast?
Yeah, that's a good question. I obviously have a different part of that story, having been on the other side. But I think a couple things. One, which usually is the case in organizations, there is usually a believer on the C-suite that believes in, okay, we've gotten this organization as far as we can. And sometimes, by the way, that's CDO, sometimes even CTO or other disciplines. But we've gotten this organization far enough with what we have. It's now a moment for us to up-level that discipline and both bring someone, either promote someone internally or bring someone externally to make a clear point about where design now stands or where engineering and other disciplines stands. And two, it's oftentimes driven by, and I think that probably was the case of Toast too, driven by the market change. Like if you want that level of talent, there is now a specific expectations of that level of talent on what their role will be in the organization. That's somewhat taken for granted in other disciplines. Like having a CTO is kind of pretty typical thing to have. That change is happening in design now, which is why like it's a novelty to have a CDO in some companies, but it's, you know, you wouldn't be surprised that a company is hiring a CTO, for example.
I'm curious what the difference though is between a chief design officer and a VP of design, who is the senior most design leader, whose boss is the head of product who reports into the CEO. It sounds like you're in a very similar context as quote VP of design. Is chief design officer simply kind of like good branding for otherwise a VP of design? Yeah. Or do you see it as actually, no, they're asking me to do something interestingly different than if I were called a VP of design?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. It really depends on the company. So like there are times where it's branding. And you hear about different roles, by the way, at the C level, that have C level, like chief, I don't know. I don't want to mention specific roles, but like I was
chief
at a hospital.
Chief customer officer, chief data officer. There's chief everything there.
Exactly. And obviously not everybody can report to the CEO. And by the way, sometimes that's not what you want either, depending on the maturity of the org that you're leading and your place in the organization and so on. But I do think, so there are places where, hey, chief is a way to attract talent. It's only one part of the equation. If we give that title, we're able to bring someone in. But really, it's internally not a big change. And there are times where it's actually not the case. It's actually part of the senior leadership team, part of the executive team. Only people at that level have that, you know, being part of that team. And that means you have responsibilities to the company, owning the actual end-to-end experience and sometimes customer experience end-to-end. You are actually accountable to metrics, company-wide metrics. That's the case at Toast. Accountable to company-wide metrics around experience, around product satisfaction, around customer satisfaction, and so on. And the other piece is, We have been working a lot at Toast to drive, which is part of the hiring of this role, to drive the partnership in R&D around design, engineering, and product. So this role was not just about a single person, but about having triads from the top down across the whole organization, starting with CTO, CEO, or you can think of it, by the way, if you remove C titles, as VP of engineering, as VP of design, and as VP of product, down to product teams that are operating at a designer, product person, and engineer. I think that there's a lot of debate in design about who reports to who and how reporting works. My opinion is that debate is sometimes misguided around, to do a hot take, to be controversial, around ego of the person versus the actual value that the role can bring to the org. I think the most important thing is, are you a partner to your product and engineering partners, or are you a member of one of their teams? Like, are you a true partner to the engineering and product org, and obviously other orgs and marketing and customer success and so on? Two, do you have the autonomy to actually execute for your org things that might not be popular at the time but you believe are true? Do you have the autonomy to execute alongside product and engineering versus for product and or engineering? And three, are you accountable for true company-wide metrics or outcomes? Or is that accountability held by someone else? Like, are you actually accountable to the company? Obviously, everybody's accountable to the company, but is part of the company's key experiences or metrics part of your accountability, or are you, you know, delegated that accountability through someone else? As long as you have those three, then where you report to, what your title is, obviously, you get different access points having these different areas, and there are extremes. Like if you're reporting 16 levels down, but you have these things, obviously autonomy is not there. But in my mind, it's less about that and more about, do you have these three pieces that make you a true leader in the org?
The first of those you mentioned is being a true partner with product and with engineering. It's interesting because we hear so much about the need for better partnership there. And I think that in a lot of cases, the elevation of design to the C-level is intended to kind of enforce that partnership. Because a lot of people really, they don't know what a good, true partnership actually looks like here. Yeah. Because nobody in the room has had that experience. What do you think makes for a good, true partnership between product design and engineering?
Yeah, I think obviously every discipline brings something else to the room, but I think a true partnership means true ownership of the overall outcomes of that triad. So, you know, if you're a partner in that team, you're involved in, and you have ownership over how do we come up with the strategy. So like, what are we going to go actually achieve next year at any level, by the way, even if you're leading a team, what ways in which we're going to actually go and measure the success of that strategy, and then owning the outcomes of the execution of that strategy, even when it's not necessarily the execution of your team. So like, if you're having a conversation that says design has shipped, but engineering hasn't, you're not really a true partner. Because at the end of the day, yes, you might not be the head of engineering, but you have responsibility as a true partner to figuring out how do the three of us sit in the room and drive that level of accountability. In my mind, shared outcomes and shared metrics is the North Star way you materialize true partnership. Because if you're responsible for, hey, look, your metrics as the head of design or leader of the design team or the design discipline is, you know, as long as you ship these three metrics, you ship on time, you deliver a great experience, whatever that means, and your team is happy, you're good. If those are the metrics you're tracking, notice that none of these metrics talks about actually shipping the product. None of those metrics talk about product market fit. None of those metrics talk about revenue. None of those metrics talk about you're staying in business. So if you don't really feel accountable for the other metrics, or quote unquote other metrics that truly form triad accountability, then you're not really a true partner. The opposite is true. If your engineering and PM partners don't feel accountability towards experience metrics, they're not true partners. True partnership is often formed together. It's a partnership. So like, if you're not coming up with the metrics together, if you're not building the metrics together, if you're not building the strategy together, if you're not accountable together, if your rituals are separate, then, you know, you might be a great collaborator, but that's not necessarily the same as a great partner.
Mm-hmm. That makes so much sense to me. And at the same time, I also hear from design leaders that they want unique metrics for design because they need to provide proof of design's unique contribution to the organization, and that these blended or shared metrics actually make it easier for design's contribution to be kind of swept under the rug.
Yeah, and it's very fair. And it depends on the kind of maturity of the org. But the way I think about it, and I've been there too, there are metrics that prove your worth, and there are metrics that are actually valuable. And those two are not always the same. Sometimes they are, but they're not always the same. So as an example, if you're early on in your design leadership role, and the company is early on in their design maturity, maybe the metric that proves your worth is the opinion of engineering and product of you. And that's not going to stay the same. And I know that, like, to many designers or design leaders who are hearing this conversation, it might be like an allergic reaction to that statement.
Let me interrupt, because I'm curious if that's something you've had in prior jobs. You've worked in very engineering-heavy companies, very tech-driven companies. Was that something you needed to do to build that maturity muscle? Is this born of your experience?
Yeah, it is. And sometimes if you step aside and say, let's say it's not a mature design team and not a mature organization from the way design is viewed. If you step out and say, I got to invent my own experience metrics that I'm now going to build the whole thing around them to measure them and I'm going to report on them, but the organization is not even ready to have that conversation, instead of proving your worth, you're seen as like, you know, vanity conversations around things that we don't care about. So like, you're spending so much time building these metrics that we don't even care about. Versus, I'm actually going to work very closely with my engineering and PM partner. Doesn't matter if they see me as one yet, but I'm going to work very closely with them, have ownership over what we're shipping and not shipping, talk the language of that team, which, by the way, could be most teams have an experience language that is not up to our standards in design, maybe, but most teams talk about experience in one way or another. They talk about it in adoption, they talk about it in customer qualitative feedback, they talk about it in NPS. So there is a bunch of different language in the business that exists. How do you capitalize on the existing language and say, I understand it, I'm accountable to it, I'm going to help you get there? It could be a great starting point for someone in engineering and PM to say, I could have not gotten there if it wasn't for this person or if it wasn't for this team. And then capitalizing on saying, now that we've had that credibility, let me tell you how we can do this better. Like, let me tell you this one other metric that if we track, we can provide such a, you know, a much better experience there. But taking the leap of faith from, you know, we don't know what design does, to let me tell you the exact metrics I'm going to invent and then hold myself accountable to, is sometimes too big of a gap to be effective. Again, depending on the org. That's, by the way, not the story at Toast, for example, but that was the story in previous roles earlier on.
You've touched on organizational maturity a couple of times, and I wonder how you see that tracking with the age of the company itself, because you've worked for some older, much more sort of established companies, as well as companies that were much, much earlier in their life cycles. And I'm curious how you see the organizational life cycle affecting the way the design is received and the way that design is done in these organizations.
I think it plays a factor, but I think the structure of the team you're immediately having an impact on is likely far more important. So like, if you think about, you know, our roles in different organizations, there is probably a role you don't understand. Like, we talk about design a lot because we're designers and that's our thing. But like, if I ask you, what do you think a business analyst does and what is their value to the organization? And there should
they
be-
They analyze be, business.
I mean, it's very clear. I understand. But, but you know, like, there are so many roles in every organization. And there are roles within roles, right? Like, in design, in the big umbrella of design, there is a product designer and user researcher and design ops and blah, blah, blah. And two things are true. Not everybody needs to understand these roles. Like, it's just impossible for like, a CEO, for example, as the top of the umbrella or the board, to understand every single role that makes this organization tick. And not every role deserves a full discipline and team and, you know, a large umbrella of a C-level role or something like that. It's just not scalable as an organization. So if you think about it from that perspective, and then think about the next step of, okay, and then how do we make the decision for what gets a larger umbrella versus what doesn't? There are two paths to that. There's the path of advocating for, I'm going to start at the C-level, and I'm going to convince every single executive in the organization that design is the most important thing under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is the path of saying, I'm going to actually make impact in a circle that I can actually influence. Depending on where you are in the org, that could be your immediate team, that could be the VP team, that could be, you know, the engineering team. You know, it depends where the org is and what's the center of influence. And a lot of the time, the center of influence is not where you think it is. Like, if you're an engineering-heavy organization, individual contributor, senior engineers, hold a lot of weight. So collaborating closely with architects ends up being such a huge impact on how design is seen across the org. One, because they're thinking at a high level. They're not bogged down by the daily details of what they need to ship every day. Two, they have systems thinking already. They apply it differently, but they're actually very close to the way we operate in design. And three, they're generally at a level of maturity where they have the company's hat on versus their individual team, even though they're attached to a specific team, but they're still thinking, how can I make this company better? And they have a ton of influence. They have influence on the executive leadership team. They have influence. And this is just an example, not saying always start there. But if you're an engineering heavy organization, collaborating with these senior engineers may be far more effective path than let's build design metrics across the org that's going to convince the CEO that C-level role is needed. And then how you deliver in collaborating with these architects on, you know, whatever their goals are, ends up being a huge ticket to, wow, like, imagine if every architect in this organization had a designer working with them. Now imagine if every engineer in this organization had a designer working with them. Now imagine if every team had a senior level person working with them. And then take it from there into that story. But you have to understand the organization and the way it operates. And that's less about the age of the team or company and more about, like, what tools and what does the environment give you?
I want to kind of follow this thread, but specific to Toast, where you've been there, if LinkedIn is accurate, about 7 months. So still pretty new.
6 months. Yeah.
6 months. Yeah. And I'm curious what you found when you joined. How much was already set in place, i.e. your product peer and your engineering peer, had they been there? Had they developed a relationship that you now had to find your way into, or was everyone new and you were all figuring it out together? You know, as you're talking about relationships and navigating organizations to understand how to situate yourself to be effective, what was that experience like for you 6 months ago as you assumed this role at Toast?
Yeah, so it's kind of mixed. As an example, for my triad, like the immediate triad, the SVP product has been there for a few years, 2-3 years. But my partner in engineering, our CTO, joined, I think, a month after me, if I'm not mistaken. So we had like a chance to set up the triad together. two of three members of the key triad joined recently. The person, Steve, who leads R&D is one of the co-founders. So he's been there since the early days of the first line of code. So there's a mix of that. But on that note, which kind of gives me just quick something to think about, there is no organization that's not changing. I think one of the key things a design leader can do is figure out what change that's happening and how you tie in the change you want to drive into it. Like in my case, for example, a new CTO joined. The product leader was there and he's an awesome partner to work with. Working together, okay, how do we want to shape this relationship? Was the change that you can tie a lot of stuff into. We want to build triads across the org. We want to drive change across the org. Here's how it's going to work. In other organizations, the change could be people have been there for a very long time, but the team is going through, I don't know, some change management process around process. We want to change planning. Okay, let's change planning together. Let me tell you how I can help change planning. Whatever it is, there's always something to tie into.
And when you think of the change that you see yourself driving as a design leader, the change that you want to weave into the change that's already unfolding in the organization, what guides your choices?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like looking 6 months back, like maybe three or four things that influence this. One is conversations with a team. So spending time and listening to it, and I use team as a larger kind of umbrella. It's not just the design team, the R&D organization. Spending time with the team to understand, first of all, how do we see the quality of what we're shipping? Like, are we happy with the experience we're shipping? And if not, why not? Obviously, you develop your own opinion, but listening from the organization tells you a lot about how much bar raising you need to do. Listening to how is designing versus shipping working? So many good experiences die in Figma graveyards where like, you know, yeah, let me tell you this experience that we've designed 6 months ago that never shipped and never will ship because, and sometimes it's not because of engineering. Sometimes it's because it was designed in a way that cannot be shipped. Sometimes it's engineering is not shipping and sometimes product doesn't believe in it. But listening to these stories is really helpful. So that listening piece is one piece. The corporate strategy and company strategy is the other piece. Where do we actually want to go? And most companies have a 3-year strategy at a minimum. So understanding that longer term strategy, not just next year. There's the piece of digging deeper into the team dynamics for design in particular. Do we have the right talent? Do we have the right people? Do we have the right skill sets? Do we have the right organizational structures that enable that to happen? And then the last piece is process. Do we have, you know, is this, hey, we actually have the tools in the toolbox and we're just not using them effectively, or we are using them effectively and can use them better? Or is this like actually there is more change management to happen process-wise? Understanding those four were the key pieces to kind of setting up, okay, here's our experience strategy.
And when you set up an experience strategy, is this your own N-month plan, 12-month plan, 18-month plan? Like you mentioned the 3-year strategy, are you doing kind of your own version, probably not with this distant to horizon line that you start to work towards? How explicit does that become? How broadly shared is it? Does everyone understand it? Explain kind of how that strategy gets operationalized or manifest.
So about 3 to 4 months in, so 2-3 months ago, we kind of developed that experience strategy working with the design leadership team, our general managers of each one of the lines of businesses that we have, as well as the R&D executive team. I own the experience strategy, so I'm the single-threaded owner that's accountable for that, for delivering on that strategy. And the strategy has two pieces to it. Here is how we think of experience as toast, which impacts every single person's job in R&D. So for example, here's how we're going to measure our experiences before we ship them. Here's the level of quality we expect from every product that ships across the organization. Here is how we're going to work closely with support on our customer experience. So this is every single team. Here's the framework by which experience is going to work at Toast. So that's one piece. And the other piece, and here are very specific projects that I'm accountable for that will lead experience on product, customer, and end-to-end experience. So on customer experience, here's the work that specifically design will own in working with our customer success team to improve our customer experience. On product, here are the specific 2 or 3 product leverages that we think our experience is a very important piece in and we're going to own the metrics on. And, you know, I'm accountable for both. I'm accountable for experience metrics across the org, but obviously you can't be accountable for every product experience. Your teams are and your triads are, but personally, that's not the role. But accountable for that framework being implemented, measured, tracked, and part of our quarterly business reviews. And then on the other side, here are specific projects that design will be someone from design will be the single-threaded owner in driving. Obviously also tracked by metrics, but specific outcomes that we're going to drive next year. And that timeline is 2023.
So what you're explaining feels quite mature, quite robust, and My sense is most of the design leaders that I know and work with wouldn't know how to build a strategy like this, right? Because they're not thinking about things always from that business lens or have that understanding. And so I'm curious how much of this was something that you created, that you said, this is my playbook, this is how I make sense of things. How much was asked of by the head of R&D and your peers? Like, how did you know that this was the shape for this strategy to take?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a kind of combination. So we the product team, by product, I'm using the bigger umbrella of product, you know, R&D. Design, engineering, yeah. And product. The product team is accountable to deliver a strategy for like the way it works at Toast before we do planning. Like, here's what we want to go do next year. And the expectation was, and that's part of the work we did as a triad, the expectation was there are product strategy pieces that cross everybody's work. Like, how are we going to go ship product X and product Y is a combination, and triads on that product area need to go and tell us what they want to do. There are pieces, though, that are horizontal across the org, or pieces where we want to lean in more on either engineering or design in particular.
Right.
So in engineering, think about scalability, reliability, engineering effectiveness, so on and so forth. On design, think specific rethinking of areas of the experience. You can think of design system and other things, but there are areas where, hey, we're going to take a lead on reshaping this specific experience. Trying my best to say it without giving the specific example for 2023, not giving away strategy, but that design saying we want to do horizontally, that ends up being for engineering and design what we're sharing that are specifics, and then a point of view on how we're going to track across all of these different products, how we're going to track that we're delivering good experiences in a reliable, scalable, secure, etc. way. So it's a combination. Like, there was an expectation that the triad would deliver that product strategy with specific horizontal deliveries. But also that expectation was more of, we need an experience strategy. There wasn't really an expectation, and here's how it's going to look like. And I think that's the role of a CDO. Like, that's a huge part of the role of the CDO. And by the way, that's shared. Like, it starts with, you know, we presented it to the executive team, the whole executive team, tons of great feedback, because the marketing team looks at it from their perspective, and if that's good enough, the customer experience team looks, customer care service team looks at it from their perspective, the CEO looks at it from their perspective. We took that feedback, shared it with the rest of the organization, we shared it with the R&D team first, and then with all of Toast, as this is Toast's experience strategy. This is not the design team experience strategy. And by the way, we call it experience strategy on purpose. This is not a design strategy. This is Toast's experience strategy. This is how experience is going to happen at Toast moving forward. A big part of that strategy is the frameworks by which we know we will ship a good experience, and we know we've shipped a good experience. Calling it design strategy in my mind limits it to here's what the design team wants to do.
Right.
Or here's the, you know, it's like saying, you know, here's, oh, we use business analysts, but like, here's the business analyst's strategy. If I tell you that's true, and then I tell you, here's a 30 minute of it, my reaction at least would be like, good for them, glad they have a strategy, but I don't really need to know. Versus here's our Toast analytics strategy. I'm like, oh, okay, I need to learn a little bit more about that, because I need to understand how the metrics I'm driving are gonna fall into that. So experience is the ownership of everyone, design is the team or discipline.
So then you are carving out a space for design within these conversations.
Yeah, design has specific ownership over key deliveries, both in terms of the frameworks, how we deliver or operationalize these frameworks, but also actually, you know, like we proposed and got funded for specific that will enhance our experience in 2023 that design owns. By the way, these happen across the org. So like, the engineering teams that will deliver these experiences report to engineering, but design actually owns the budget and metrics for actually having these delivered and actually impacting the experience.
You were talking about engaging people across the org. And there's one relationship within that that I'm curious about, because in my experience, there is a particular kind of senior executive that needs special handling in this kind of process. And that is the company founder. And I should know because I've been one. So I'm curious about,
yeah,
as you're doing all of this strategy work and all of this visioning work, how does that work when you're engaging with the people who came up with the idea for the thing in the first place?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think, obviously it depends on the company and the founders, but at least at Toast, we're lucky that both founders are still very deeply involved and deeply care. But also, recognize the scale at which the company operates now, that might not be the scale at which the company operated, you know, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. That said, I think founders hold a lot of keys to not just the product or strategy, they hold a lot of keys to culture. A lot of culture gets formed by the founders and what they care about. And most founders, not just Toast, most founders, you know, I've worked with have deep care for experience. They might materialize those words differently, but they deeply, deeply care. And they partially deeply care because they've been in the trenches selling the product, hearing from customers, getting the customer support call late at night to do something early on in their career. And that's imprinted in their brains of how, like, you know, the empathy is core to building a company. You can't really build a company without talking to customers. And that's really powerful because it's also, you know, it's also important to translate that empathy into why you're doing the things you're doing. So I worked closely with our founders on that experience strategy. But one of the first things I shared as an example in the experience strategy when we went through it, the first 10 minutes out of the hour, 10, 15 minutes, were three specific customer stories. Like, we ran through, here's a restaurant, the name of the restaurant, here's the problem they're facing. You know, Kate at the following restaurant, not to mention a restaurant name on here, but Kate at the following restaurant, here's what happened when she used product X, here's how that product looks like. It is a real story of what happened. And by the way, that story represents X percent of our customers. So, like, this is not an anecdote. But starting with these stories was really powerful in bringing back that, you know, this is about people, this is about restaurants, this is about the people we care about and you care about and we all deeply care about. And these are statistically significant things for us to be, you know, paying attention to. But those stories, I think working with founders resonate a lot because, again, it brings back the deep empathy they have for customers and the deep care they have for individual, you know, customers they've worked with. And by the way, some still Toast customers, or many are still Toast customers, that, you know, call the founders by name, bridging that empathy they have to, okay, and here's how that translates into business, and here's how that business translates into action or what we're going to do about it, becomes really important. Like, that, telling that story in that perspective.
So you're now hip deep, neck deep in restaurants, and your prior jobs were much more technical. Yep. VMware, Splunk, your audience were developers and engineers, and now your audience are people like me who like to order from Cholita Linda down the block, and the people who run those.
Hopefully using Toast, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Cholita Linda's on Toast. That's why I'm mentioning Cholita Linda.
Yeah.
And the people who run Cholita Linda, and I'm just going to keep saying their name because they provide my favorite both fish tacos and Cubano sandwich in the Bay Area. But I work at Groupon, and I know that the people who run restaurants are terrible business people who don't have IT functions, right? And so you're dealing with a very different audience now in terms of level of savvy, the challenges they're facing, the role that technology plays in their lives. And I'm wondering how you've had to change, if at all, how you approach your job as a chief design officer, serving these very different audiences than the very technical, very savvy ones that you might have worked with before.
Yeah, I think, so I wouldn't call them very terrible business people. I would call them very passionate, hospitality-oriented people who need to figure out the business to continue to provide that service.
They might be naive business people, right? That's not what they're getting into it for, right? They didn't get into it to run a business. They got into it to serve food. They recognize that in order to do so, they need a business that survives, but they don't have MBAs. They don't understand a lot of kind of core business stuff. That's not their passion. I was being a little facetious. So that aside, how is it just transferable? Like, how you led at Splunk is how you lead at Toast? Or are you having to change how you show up in the things you're doing to accommodate now a different audience that your products are serving?
Yeah, a lot of the lessons you learn are transferable. So, you know, for example, starting from how you lead your team, how you hold yourself accountable, your team accountable, how do you build processes that enable teams to execute? These things, and they don't look the same at every company, but these things become lessons you learn about what could work and what might not work. But I think, you know, moving to B2B to C, and specifically around small businesses at Toast, there are a lot of lessons that I've learned over the last 6 months, and a lot of advantages that you can start applying previous lessons faster to. So for example, like speaking to customers. I'm now the guy at a restaurant at dinner with my wife who like, you know, just give me a few minutes and walk to the kitchen and talk to the people in the kitchen and talk to the GM of the restaurant. And, and when a waiter comes in, the weirdo says, do you like this device? What do you like about it? What could be improved for 5 minutes? So access to customers is very different. When I worked at VMware Splunk, you know, you're working with an admin who's at a company who you have to get access to, who you need to plan an hour of their busy day to be able to talk to them. So it's a lot different. So getting a pulse is a lot easier than it was before. But also the audience you design for is very different. So how you think about the experience you're delivering and the quality of the experience is very different. In enterprise, people are willing to go through walls to get to the value. Like as long as you're delivering value to some extent, and that value is entrenched into how people operate, you can get away with a lot. That's not obviously true for, you know, someone who's trying to operate their business effectively and they run a small business and they run on thin margins and they have to get things done quickly. Like that's a very different set of expectations that you have to design for, or guests or consumers that have a different, you know, expectations of the consumer experience. But I think the muscle of how you deliver good experience, the intuition and muscle of how do you build a good team that can deliver these good experiences, the muscle of taking ownership of the customer experience that's delivered, that muscle is very transferable, even if the toolbox is different. So, you know, like I think about it, if you're, I don't know, I'm not into gardening, but if you think of gardening, planting different trees takes different types of work. But a lot of what you learn from gardening in general applies. Like you don't just water all your plants the same way. You don't plant all of them the same way. You don't cut the leaves in the same, you know, different seasons require you to do different things. But if you get into gardening, you know, once you've learned the basics, the foundations, and you've gotten good at it, then learning how to plant a new tree is a lot easier than if it's your first. And every company, every role, even by the way, VMware versus Splunk, even though they're both an enterprise, was a very different role.
Speaking of those roles and what you learned from them, you're a little bit unusual among the heads of design that we've spoken to in that you really sort of came out of this world of design systems and firsthand experience in spinning them up and building them from scratch. And I wonder how you feel that experience has informed you as a design leader.
Yeah, so I started my career in engineering. And I know most, by the way, most design leaders I know started their career elsewhere, like in a different function. It doesn't have to be engineering, but somewhere else. And I think, by the way, if used correctly, that's very powerful. Like being bilingual in two things is like, I joke that I'm bilingual in engineering and design. It's a very powerful way of being able to empathize with someone else in the org, but also push on them in certain ways. I think working on design systems, when we set up Clarity, which is the design system for VMware, we started with, I think at the time, three, four people, including the engineering team. And we grew Clarity from nothing to the design system for VMware across 35,000 people and you know 130, 140 products. That journey teaches you a lot about what's possible with a small team, what's possible, you know, having to actually, and you can learn the journey in different ways, by the way, but selling teams on owning a piece of their work with very little influence over that work. So you're owning their UI layer, you're owning their engineering implementation components, you know, without a top-down mandate. So that was very interesting. But it also teaches you a lot on the challenges of the details. Like things that may seem very obvious, you now understand how difficult they may be, but also you understand how to balance them. Just an example, every designer at a certain point in their career implements a date picker or is around a team that implements a date picker. And, you know, date pickers are very simple if you think about it, like just from a consumer experience. Like you go pick your flight, it's very simple. You choose the date, you choose the time, you're good to go. Like if you go to, I don't know, Kayak or Expedia or something. But they're actually quite complicated. Making them accessible is very hard. Ensuring that they're easy to use for the use case you're looking for is very difficult. The balance of that, though, is, you know, you hear stories about teams that spent 8 weeks building a date picker from scratch, even though their product includes like two date pickers in a workflow that like 1% of users visit. And it teaches you about value, like what matters to spend time on versus not. And you also hear about teams where, you know, if you're a travel site, that's actually a very important piece of your business and every small improvement makes a huge difference. But that systematic thinking about the layer of who uses it, how do you build it in ways that different use cases can use it, and how do you build it in a way where engineering teams can actually use it? Like engineering productivity matters a lot. It changes your perspective about how organizations operate. because it exposes you to all these layers of different choices you have to make on such a simple thing as a, you know, quote unquote, simple thing as a date picker.
What led to your shift from engineer to designer to design leader? Why that path?
I don't know if we have time on this podcast, but I really wanted to be a journalist, by the way. Like, that was my dream growing up, and that's what I really wanted to do.
Well, now you're talking Jesse's language.
Yeah. So when I started kind of reporting on news stories, I'm originally from Palestine, so I started reporting on news stories there. This is very long time ago. It was a time where you had to set up your own website, you have to set up your own thing, and you have to, you know, we used to rent servers from SoftLayer, and you add a server every time a few thousand users show up. That got me from like, oh, actually, as much as I love writing, I also love writing code. So I really enjoyed the process of building that experience. And then I really loved being able to analyze consumer behavior and build that experience around it. Like the ability to have data very, I don't know if you remember the like server data. You actually get
like
what
log
the server's logging.
And stuff.
Exactly. Like you're really analyzing what server data is giving you, and you're trying to understand why people are going to this thing versus this other thing. It was real helpful. So as I started as an engineer, I always kind of stayed close to customers, and that was really powerful to me. And that translated into, okay, how can I better write better code to do it? Design systems, before design systems, I worked on a product that was, you know, this UI/UX role where you lead both teams. And that was kind of a transition point to me. If actually, you know, there's a ton of impact to do when you systematically improve the experience, which was through design systems. And then from there, okay, like I actually really enjoy the impacting experiences at scale role, which is how I think about my role. Still a journalist at heart. Not a career though.
So you started at Toast 6-7 months ago. The past 6-7 months have been strange, to say the least, in any number of vectors. And I'm wondering what it's meant for you in terms of how you show up as a leader, given both the uncertainty that we're seeing inside companies with the economic conditions and companies having layoffs and stock prices go mostly down, but also sideways. But then also with your customers, particularly the restaurants, who are probably also feeling a lot of anxiety and concern and yeah, because of the uncertainty. And just like, how do you help? I mean, you've got to figure out your own way of navigating through it, but then how do you help the people that you're responsible to on both sides, both in-house and externally? How do you see your responsibility helping them all navigate through this?
Yeah, we're lucky in a couple of ways at Toast. Restaurants are surprisingly resilient to you know, I don't want to say the word recession, so I'm trying to think about a different word so I don't jinx this call, but you know, recession related things. And obviously that doesn't remove the uncertainty, and it doesn't remove the, you know, like nobody could have predicted a pandemic 2 years ago, so you know, like you never know what happens. But I think the one thing that stuck with me early on in my career, I worked with a leader who was very transparent about sharing what they're able to share. Like there are obviously always things that you can't share, like, you know, financial numbers or something, but they were very transparent, and you always knew that you had all the information that you needed to have, good or bad. And it really resonated with me that there was never like, if there was bad news, it's not because they knew it and I didn't, it's because they didn't, which is fine. Like there's always uncertainty in any job, any time, any place. And that really resonated with me. And I tried to do it at work where, for example, as part of our rituals, I have a weekly all hands, we call it TGIT, thank God it's Thursday, where we, you know, we have half an hour where I do top of mind and update the team. I do Friday thoughts every single week on Slack, where I publish, here's what I've done in my week on Friday. Here are thoughts on things happening around the economy, the business, the team experience. This is, you know, where I share my thoughts, but also updates happening around the team. I have an anonymous feedback form in my email signature and Slack signature that says any question, all questions are okay. And then I answer them on Slack publicly. But basically it's the goal of here's all the information I know. And that still might not be enough, by the way. Doesn't mean I know everything or I know what's going to happen next week, but I know as much, I'm telling you as much as I know. And I think navigating it with the team versus navigating it for the team makes a huge difference. Like the team feeling involved in that, hey, we're navigating this together. Nobody can predict what's going to happen in 3 months, but I'm going to tell you what I know and how we're thinking about it. It makes a huge difference in folks feeling like, okay, I'm included in this journey, and being transparent about the good and the bad. Like I'm not a fan of the term, you know, being a, I don't know what we can say or not say on the podcast, but like an SHIT umbrella.
You can swear if that's what you're wondering.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of being a shit umbrella. I'm a big fan of helping shield the team from distractions. That's totally fair. But I think sometimes by being a shed umbrella, we hide the reality of how things operate, which in my mind does two things. Prevents a lot of good people who have good ideas from being part of that conversation. Does not prepare leaders for the next step, because all of a sudden, once that umbrella is removed in their new role, they realize like, holy crap, wow, okay, like I got to learn this from scratch. And the team feels like, oh, you know, I'm learning. Because once you leave the umbrella, there is always more information elsewhere. So I'm learning these things not from my leader, but I'm learning it from the rest of the organization or maybe the external market. So I'm a fan of like shielding your team, but also telling them what you're shielding them from, if you are, and then being transparent just about what you know. But for customers, I think it's very similar, like being transparent with customers with what you can, but also thinking about, you know, like we think a lot about how Toast is going to help you be more profitable, how Toast is going to help you increase your margin, how Toast is going to help you, like we impact real people's lives and real people's businesses, and we take it very seriously. And I think having that sense of urgency always to put, you know, their businesses first is really, really important. Internally, we talk about it, at least, you know, one of the principles for design is customer, business, team, self in that order. Every decision you make, customer, business, team, self in that order. So we talk a lot about the impact to customers in every decision we make, whatever that decision is.
So you've worked in a bunch of different kinds of organizations, and you've touched several times on the notion of maturity. And I wonder, as you have seen everything becoming more mature in recent years, I wonder where you see all of this going.
That's a very fun, that's like the meaning of life. So I think you'll start seeing more design leadership positions and more design leaders for two reasons. One, you know, every CDO position now, or every VP of design or SVP, whatever, you know, your choice of design position, when that person leaves, if they've done a good job, it's very hard for the organization to go backwards. So you've just created a new role. And if you think 3 years with movements, you've now have a ton of organizations that might have had their first VP, their first CDO, their first SVP, but now they will have their second and third as that person goes, opens hopefully a door elsewhere. So you'll see more design leadership roles, but I think you'll see more design leadership roles than design leaders. So like the funnel will open up where companies start realizing, okay, like if I'm a competitor to, I don't know, this other company, I'm competitor to Toast and Toast has a CDO, maybe we should start thinking about it. And like, you know, what does that mean for us? So even though it's one role in some place, it starts opening it up, and growing design leaders to get there is going to be a big deal. And then I think you're going to start seeing a lot more companies go back to basics of like, how do you make customers happy and make, keep them engaged and have them, you know, stick on the whatever platform that you have. You know, we had a, I don't know, was it a 10-year run of infinite VC money and infinite, you know, stock growth where you could have experimented with a ton of stuff and enjoyed your, you know, having 70, 80 people on the problem that, you know, to its essence is 15 people. Now you're going to get back to like, how do we do this effectively? How do we do this efficiently? How do we do this well? Where design can contribute a lot in how we de-risk experiences before they ship, how we de-risk experiences after they ship. I think that's going to be a huge part of the conversation. And then overall, I think like the flip side of that is if you look a little bit farther, you're going to have a lot more CTOs and heads of product and product directors who have a lot more experience in design. So, you know, a lot of us been in areas where design thinking or the way design works or whatever is our specialty. I don't think that's going to be good enough anymore, because the product leader you're working with will probably now know the basics to get by and knows them well, or worked with a designer or a design leader that was really good and they've learned a ton from them. You know, the bar will go higher, in my opinion, for what a designer needs to bring to the table, which is a good thing, but also means for designers, just simply coming in and saying, I can help you figure out the workflow, as an example, oversimplifying, but as an example, is not going to be good enough. And that would change the dynamics.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it this way, but the late 90s to early 2000s were great for establishing whatever user experience became before the bust happened. Like we had gotten enough of a foothold that through the bust, we were able to emerge. And perhaps these last 2 or 3 years, we've seen something similar now at the highest end of design leadership, where these companies, as they scaled and started hiring CDOs and SVPs of design over the last 2 or 3 years, because they were, every company has a team of 60 to 80 designers. That's a little bit of an overstatement, but way more. And that's provided an opportunity of figuring out what this role is and maybe introduce this role to peers that hadn't been exposed to it. That even if we're retrenching, which I'm seeing across the board with my various relationships. There's some flavor of retrenching happening, but there's a general elevation of savvy and awareness because of what's happened the last couple of years.
Yeah. As an example, this is a slightly like exaggeration on purpose or going the extreme on purpose, but if you're a design leader, like the moment of maturity for a design leader in my mind at any level is when you have a conversation that says, I'd rather have an engineer more than I want one more designer, because I care so much about what we ship that I'd rather, like, I'll take one designer away from my funding and give it to the engineering team because I feel like that's where we can make impact. Or I want to be involved in an interview for the UI engineer, you know, and I'm going to care about that as if it's my top hire this year, because I know that the quality of the shipping is actually handled by the code, not just by the Figma. These conversations where you're starting to think about, and I think they will happen more, they will be forced to happen more often in a bad economy, because, you know, it used to be, oh, no, you don't have to say, I'd rather have an engineer. We'll have both. We'll have a designer and an engineer. That goes away now. Like, we can have one. What do you want to do? And if you're part of that triad or part of that team and you're not thinking, I'd rather have an engineer because, you know, I want to ship more. I want to, like, I'll figure out how to optimize my team. Then if you've never had that conversation as a design leader, and by leader, I mean, you know, manager, IC, leader, then you should think about it. Like, you should think about why not, because then maybe you're still thinking downwards on your team versus across and above on how can I help this product mature, and especially in an economy like this.
This has been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Love the conversation.
Yes, thank you. This has been awesome. How can people engage with you across the internets?
I'm on Twitter. Kind of interesting to say that now, but it's JAFFONEH on Twitter, or if you search for my name, and on LinkedIn as well. Those are the two places I hang out the most.
I'm going to give you a plug. I'm trying to remember. The name of your website is name is Jihad?
Yeah, is that right? My name is jihad.com.
Okay. We'll make sure that's clear. I'm going to plug that just because I've found it as a helpful resource. The writings you've had, not just around design leadership, but design organizations, design operations. In particular, I think you wrote about chief of staff once that when I was doing some research. So we'll point people to that as well. Thank you so much for your contribution today. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, the conversation doesn't end here. Reach out to us. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can find both of us, Peter Merholtz and Jesse James Garrett, on LinkedIn. If you want to know more about us, check out our websites, petermerholtz.com and jessejamesgarrett.com. You can also contact us on our show website, findingourway.design, where you'll find audio and transcripts of every episode of Finding Our Way, which we also recommend you subscribe to on Apple, Google, or wherever fine podcasts are heard. If you do subscribe and you like what we're doing, throw us a star rating on your favorite service to make it easier for other folks to find us too. As always, thanks for everything you do for all of us. And thanks so much for listening.